Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Polymath Roundtable. We are back after a brief and completely unexpected hiatus with a new movie for discussion. I've been away for a couple weeks now. We had a unexpectedly long distance because of a brother's wedding and then traveling for business. So it's been about 2.5 weeks, I'm thinking, since we had an episode. Which, that's the longest break we've had, I think, at any point this year. But we are back now, and today we're going to be discussing one of the best done movies, maybe of all time. We're going to be talking about Jurassic Park. Honestly, this is a deep favorite of mine. There's a lot of stuff to both be impressed by and to take away from this film. All that and more here on today's episode of the Polymath Roundtable. Now, Jurassic Park is one of the legendary films of our time, honestly. There's so much about this film which is just groundbreaking and iconic. And for a film as old as it is, honestly, this film holds up far better than its age would suggest. From the music, to the sound effects, to the plot, to the characters, everything is just, honestly, legendary. So, I'm not going to bother with the spoiler here because, well, we're talking about a movie that's been out for well over 20 years at this point. In fact, I could be wrong, but let me check this. Nope, I'm right. This film is just as old as I am. It came out in 1993. That's 27 years. You know, most films, when you think about legendary soundtracks and special effects, they are not nearly as good as when you go back to them. You're like, oh, I'm going to rewatch it for the nostalgia. And they're like, whoa, what was I looking at before? Well, this is not one of those films. For those who haven't watched it before, the plot is simple. A rich, altruistic dreamer of a mega billionaire decides that he wants to bring back dinosaurs by cloning another arcane scientific reasoning and creates a theme park, Jurassic Park, to feature his dinosaurs on a remote Caribbean island. However, things start going wrong because, well, dinosaurs, and his investors require comforting reassurance from a team of scientists who he brings in, and, well, everything goes absolutely as you can expect, terribly. However, the good guys eventually survive, the bad guys eventually, well, don't survive. And it's a thrilling tale of man versus beast in a world where everything is not quite as it should be. The soundtrack is incredible. The overall family friendliness is quite high, except for the whole dinosaurs versus man bit. But overall, on a film rating scale, I have to put this at a 9.5 out of 10. I've got a few minor grumbles when it comes to particular casting options, but overall, this is an incredible film. It's, like I said, one of my favorites of all time. I wish I could have been there the first time that this film was shown on the theaters and you saw everything for the very first time. In full surround sound, to see that sense of wonder would have been amazing. But before we get into that, let's thank today's sponsor right now. Now that we've done the sponsorship bit out of the way, trying to make this a going proposition, I'm just going to take one brief moment to talk about the future of the podcast. Actually, this very week, I was featured in a second episode of the Cinemat Doctrine podcast. The Cinemat Doctrine podcast is run by a good friend of mine. He runs long-form discussions of movies, not just talking about the movies, but also the underlying themes and concepts in magnificently huge detail. His episodes usually run in the 90-minute long area. I was featured on it 2 weeks ago, I believe, maybe 2.5 weeks ago, in his episode on Iron Man 1. And this week, I am featured again in his discussion of Iron Man 2, two of my favorite Marvel films, despite their many flaws. It's a very long discussion, and honestly, a rather tough discussion for both of those episodes, because you've got a problematic main character tied in with a troubling world. There's a lot of discussion, and not nearly as lighthearted as our episodes are here, but probably worth a listen if you like a long-form discussion. However, we're continuing on with our style here of short, to-the-point discussion, for the most part, and I'm probably going to be continuing my Retro Movie Rewind episodes that I started back in May. Had to take a brief break from the podcast entirely because of the wedding that I was helping run, but, well, life happens. Hopefully, now that I'm a little bit freer this summer, I should be able to build up a better backlog of episodes that I can just release without worrying about deadlines of a particular week. Speaking of which, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be talking about one of my favorite mystery novels. I don't know if it's thriller novels. Yes, thriller novels. In fact, to tie it into today's episode, we're going to be talking about another Michael Crichton book, State of Fear. It's relevant to today's discussion because Jurassic Park was actually originally a novel by Michael Crichton named Jurassic Park. So, let's get back into this the discussion of the film. You know, there's a lot of books that spawn TV shows or movies. And oftentimes, you might say, oh, the book was better than the movie. The movie was better than the book. There's a lot of discussion. However, honestly, Jurassic Park is one of the films that I would say, hands down, was better than the book. Michael Crichton writes a pretty decent overall techno-thriller genre. He had a phenomenal book in the form of Timeline, which dealt with, honestly, time travel and the medieval period, which was fantastic. However, this book, honestly, it wasn't nearly as good as the film. And I really have to say that that is largely in part due to both the casting for the movie and the incredible score. So, this film deals with a lot of topics which were basically in their infancy at the time this film was produced, but have only become more and more contentious as time goes on. Items like cloning, bringing extinct species back to life, the ethical treatment of animals in zoos. Topics like these have only gone in more and more detail in the public eye. So looking back and seeing the delicacy that these topics are handled 27 years ago is honestly a little bit jaw-dropping. It's weird, you might say, because these topics were so well thought out so long ago before it became quite as big a discussion point for the media. You know, we've seen so much in the media talk about the treatment of animals at SeaWorld or Disney or other animal-themed sea parks or zoos. And what does it mean to treat animals ethically in a zoo? That seeing the same sort of discussion 30 years ago, essentially, and how much it matches up to how the discussion would change over the years is amazing. So this film, oh shoot, where do I begin? You know, let's talk about the soundtrack, because that's going to be stuck in my head for the rest of the time unless I go ahead and talk about it. John Williams has written a bunch of iconic themes. We all know the Emperor's March from Star Wars. Bum, 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 ba-de-dum, ba-de-dum. Bum, 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 da-de-dum, da-de-dum. So on. But for sheer wonder and glorious soundtrack, Jurassic Park hits it out of the park. One of the things that makes a truly iconic movie theme in my eyes is a theme that is instantly recognizable and memorable to the average person, but is also not single-dimensional. You know, if you look at a bunch of more recent films, you have tons of themes which are cribbed from modern sound bites, whether it's songs or trailer music. Everybody can just, I know that. I remember it. But it doesn't evoke a singular sense of immediate wonder and recognized place in a film. Howard Shore did a absolutely incredible soundtrack job for The Lord of the Rings. His soundtrack honestly is probably my single favorite soundtrack of all time, because every single major scene and and character has its own distinct sound and tone and theme. John Williams took a bit of a different tone here in Jurassic Park. You have a number of different important themes that really set the tone, but everything is kind of bound out around a single theme. As you're coming into the island for the first time, you have these little senses of wonder and adventure in one of the iconic themes. Bum bum dum dum ba da dum da dum dum dum. I'm not playing the actual music because I don't want to get copyright infringement, and it's kind of awkward trying to get that on a podcast. However, I apologize for my enthusiastic singing of the different themes. But that moment when you first see a dinosaur, seen through the eyes of this hard-bitten archaeologist who sees for the first time a living, breathing, walking dinosaur, and the French horns start playing, and the goosebumps just rise in your arm. Ba-da-dum, da-da-dum, da-da-dum, da-dum, da-dum, da-da-dum, da-dum, da-da-dum. You know? That phone enthusiastic noise was just what I needed. That sense of wonder is incredible. But the thing is, that theme reoccurs over and over for the rest of the film. Whether it's in bleak, minor key, or a sorrowful mourning sound, or reoccurring hope, You see it in probably four or five different productions across the course of the film. It's amazing how a single phrase or set of phrases in soundtrack can be played four or five different ways and create the same sort of feeling in different emotions. You've got the initial hope and amazement of seeing dinosaurs alive for the first time. Then later on, it starts shifting into the terror of what a dinosaur actually is when compared to a human. and then back on, you know, Hope of the New Dawn and Beyond to Survive, and then the final moments of the film as you're fleeing the island, everybody made it out who was going to make it out. There's that moment of reflection, of looking back at character progression and change, who survived and who didn't. What does this mean for the grand experiment of Jurassic Park? And here comes that theme for one last time. Slower, taking down a few tones in on the scale. I believe it's something of a minor key shift as well. And it's the same Jurassic Park theme of seeing that dinosaur again. But it's mourning, weeping almost, for what could have been the lost dreams and crushed hopes. And still that secret dream of the dinosaur walking the earth. It's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful. And that risk, that creation is something that is so, so rare. 1917, which I talked about early on in this year, had a similar sense of just incredible score production. But, you know, Jurassic Park, that the French horn calling out in wonder and despair and in mournful retrospection, all in the same film with the same tune. It's amazing. I wish I had that sort of skill when it comes to creativity and artistic creation. But, well, those who can't do podcasts talking about those who can, right? Eh? Oh, I do love a good Earl Grey. So let's switch gears just a little bit. We've talked about the soundtrack in, wow, like 7 minutes of detail, mostly listening to me ramble. But let's talk a bit more about everything else. Honestly, the dinosaur fets are sterily good when it comes to looking at past productions. I remember going back and watching Independence Day and thinking, wow, some of those stuff are just really cheesy. I mean, it's still a great film that is absolutely amazing, which maybe I'll feature that on the podcast later on in the summer. But the creations of Independence Day just do not hold up anywhere as good as this movie. The dinosaurs here are not cheesy. They're not men in rubber suits like a Power Rangers TV show. They're terrifying. They're living and breathing. They look at you and you can see creation in their eye. The hand of a creator. Honestly, it's stunning. It's terrifying seeing a T-Rex charging across a road or a velociraptor. Tap, tap, tap. That claw. Tick, tick, tick. Oh, goosebumps, goosebumps. And I know that they're puppets, but man, watching that in a dark night in my family's home still gets me a little bit shivery. And, you know, one of the things that really stunned me going back and looking at was realizing just how much of those original dinosaurs were not CGI, but were actually animatronics and puppets. It's a lost art, honestly, because the ease of computer-aided production has made movies lazy. I don't want to point fingers, but I'm looking at The Mandalorian, which I talked about last year, is an incredible production, but most of the film, most of the TV show was filmed on a soundstage. That's something which I did not know at the time, but I've learned since. The Mandalorian, most of it was filmed inside a 360-degree TV, essentially. They had screens all the way around that could project a background for film shots. So most of the film takes place in a circular soundstage. Now, I look at other productions from the past where, you know, they weren't able to CG a city together. So once what they did instead was build models. Like the T-Rex for Jurassic Park was not a, you know, a small scale hand puppet. It was a giant dinosaur that was hand painted and animated and controlled. And I'm still in awe, honestly, because I can't even imagine how they were able to do it, given the technology of the time. Another brilliant part of the movie is the character progression. The main focus of the movie, Dr. Grant, is a driven and somewhat oblivious paleontologist who is initially shown as, honestly, terrifying a young kid with his depiction of a velociraptor's attack pattern. And he's also shown as not exactly being nice to kids because he just doesn't like them. However, over the course of the film, we see him develop as a person. He starts expanding his repertoire from just the dinosaurs that he's dug up to actually, you know, interacting with people to see their sides of the world, as well as discovering that maybe kids aren't so bad. He goes through some fairly harrowing time periods with the kids in the film and comes out a better man. Honestly, the characterization of the film works a whole lot better than the similar characters in the original book. Especially John Hammond, the main funder and billionaire at the center of the film. In the original book, he's a ruthless, bloodthirsty business guy. But giving him the sense of wonder and amazement that drives him to create these dinosaurs leaves him with a whole lot more impact, if you will, compared to the possible other version. You see, leaving him as this wonder-filled old man of, you know, grandfather status makes the whole discussion about whether or not it is ethical to bring back these dinosaurs. Who are we to stand in the face of extinction and bring back the dead species back to life? You know, what level of treatment is appropriate towards these creatures that we have brought back? It's a very interesting discussion, and pairing the financial obsession of perhaps some members of the cast with this amazed old man who says, you know, that these creatures are not meant to be just for the super rich to enjoy, but for all humanity to join and wonder at. It makes for a much more impressive discussion. Now, I do have to admit that there is a uncomfortable amount of assumption when it comes to the science here, whether it's the wholesale adoption of evolution and evolutionary based thinking, or the frankly novel based science that doesn't quite actually work the way that they use it. But overall, it's a good film. There's a lot of good family moments, of incredible character growth. I won't admit that I am peeved by how they characterize their tech support as being evil and fat and gross. But on the whole, it's a great film. The soundtrack, the creation is iconic. The visuals are stunning. Action is thrilling. And while Dr. Ian Malcolm, as played by Jeff Goldblum, is just as annoying as Jeff Goldblum is in every other film, it's also very iconic. And he draws a lot of similarities in my mind between his character here and his character in Independence Day. The same sort of stammering but pointed discussion of scientific topics. It just, life finds a way. But that could be a much longer discussion. Jeff Goldblum, is he playing a character? Or is all these other characters just Jeff Goldblum in a hat? Kind of like Nicolas Cage. But that's a whole nother discussion. Now, I'm going to start closing us off there, because otherwise I'm going to end up talking for another hour. But nobody wants to hear that here on this channel. So, let's talk about today's random word of the day. Today's random word of the day is, dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-bum, drum roll please, forfend. Forfend, F-O-R-F-E-N-D. Forfend is a archaic word meaning essentially forbid. It is most commonly found in such sayings such as heaven forfend, which transliterated to modern English would be heaven forbid. It comes from the Middle English fenden, to defend, fight, or prevent, shortened from Old French and Middle French, from Latin, etc., etc. Essentially, if you go back far enough, you get into Proto-Indo-European gefund, I think. I'm probably mispronouncing that horribly, to strike. What it means is essentially to prevent, to defend, to protect in some sort of way, forfend, to avert. Yeah. Heaven forfend. Sounds sufficiently snotty. I should use that more often in my exclamations towards people. Heaven forfend. Forfend. To avert or forbid. Forfend. So there we are, closing off for today with a slightly longer episode to kick off a new set of episodes. It's been a while due to traveling, but I'm happy to be back. Jurassic Park is a great film. There's characters and visuals and music all tying together into a great story with questions of, you know, ethics and morals and personal interactions. I mean, I didn't even get into talking about such topics as the worker is worthy of his hire, and also being sure to pay your tech support guy enough that he is loyal to you. But even without discussing that, this is a film that is iconic. It's not even dealing with, you know, really huge, deep moral questions like Schindler's List or even The Great Escape. But at the same time, it deals with a lot of uncomfortable questions about life and the value of living creatures, even if they're not, not ourselves, not human. It's a great film. Something that I think you probably should watch at some point in your life. And you do have to be aware that it's drinking deep from the concept of evolution. But that aside, I strongly recommend this film. Now, we're going to be back later on this week, probably, for another Retro Movie Rewind, assuming that I get the time to record the episode. You can also hear me on the Cinemat Doctrine podcast. I was featured in the Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2 episodes, which are now out today. And as always, you can find me on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts, or on my own website at www.polymathroundtable.com. Thanks for listening. I would love to hear from you on my Facebook page. Just search for The Polymath Roundtable. And as always, have a great week. Bye now.